afternoon. So last time we started talking about kind of systematically adding bounce checking in cases where we previously had kind of traditional C code or some other language that like C kind of gave raw pointer access. And we mentioned kind of one idea was this fat pointer idea, where the problem is when we want to do bounce checking, we need to know, well, what are the bounds? And in some cases, that's really clear. We have the array declaration, and we're doing an array annexing. We can just quickly identify the bounds that way. But other times, we're passing a pointer to a function, and the way kind of C naturally works, we often pass pointers which don't have the information about what the size of the thing they point to is, and where in the, that thing it, that pointer is. So we can add that on, turning our pointers into kind of this structure where they include kind of the bounds of the object or array they're pointing to, and we just keep track of those when we manipulate where the pointer points, if we're like doing, you know, pointing to a different part of the array, and on pointer to reference, we make sure that it's still in bounds, and if it's not, we say, hey, the program has an array out of bounds or something like that. We mentioned that, you know, whenever people try to do some effort like this where we want to take some existing code that is insecure in a programming language because the programming language doesn't kind of enforce security, we find out that people have very creative ways of using the functionality of the programming language. And in C, we saw that there were a bunch of people who converted pointers to integers and back very deliberately, which makes it very hard to pass the size information. And also people who like had a struct within another struct, and we kind of liked the idea that if you get a pointer to, you know, a variable in a struct, you can't turn that into a pointer to the outer struct, because a lot of our kind of buffer overflows were based on precisely violating that property. But there's code that does that deliberately to implement something like inheritance in C. That is pretty common, it turns out. Then we talked about, you know, after talking about sort of this fat pointer approach, we said, well, you know, this is like making pointers really big. And most notably, it has this incompatibility that we've changed how all function calls work, because now every time we're passing a pointer, we need to pass this structure that's much bigger. And so another design is that we can say, okay, let's not, you know, have pointers change in their format. Instead, let's pass with pass our normal pointers, but have a way of looking up what's the object they're a part of. And this idea, I just talked about one particular implementation in this paper called Baggy Bounds. And they had this lookup table. And to make that lookup table viable as far as sort of overhead, they made this compromise that they made everything a power of two size and on a power of two. So the lookup table could just contain what's the size of this. And we did some, you know, rounding down to the net power of two to find out where the object started. And this meant we wasted space when allocating objects. But it meant that kind of our runtime checks were easier. And in this design, rather than checking when we dereference a pointer, we just make sure that when we're manipulating a pointer to get elsewhere in the array or similar, that we make sure it stays within the same object. So we just check that, we look up where is the object start when we, before we change the pointer, where does it start after, and if that's different, we know we won't have an overflow. And at that point, we trigger an error. And so we'll talk a little more about how the baggy bounds idea works, and related to what the design of probably the more popular bounds checking tool that you've used, which is address sanitizer, which I think most of you used for the fuzz assignment, and talk about like what's the address sanitizer approach, and also like just think over like what kind of problems do the more efficient approaches not really solve, the more efficient approaches and the more compatible approaches, right? With address sanitizer, just like with Matthew Bounds, we don't have to like recompile all the libraries to use it. And the same, and that like is giving up, has some compromises that we're making as far as what we protect against. And we'll talk about. So before I move on for things, questions about things we covered last time. Okay, so I'd like to make some notes on the sandbox assignment. So note that in the sandbox assignment, some things that have come up when people are doing the assignment that emphasize. So in our kind of system call filtering idea, we kind of start this program that's meant to be our privilege separated part. And usually we set up a filter after that thing starts. And this has the advantage that we don't need to actually allow all the startup operations in the filter. So note when you're like looking at what system calls does this do, well, there's a lot of stuff that's just the program starting up, loading libraries and things like that. You can ignore those as long as you make sure you set the filter after those are done. That makes things a lot easier. Also, it's okay for your program to abort on an invalid operation. We don't care if it like prints something meaningful. We just care that, you know, like it doesn't create a file it's not supposed to. I think that kind of matches you expect. And related to aborting, the IPC library I gave you, as I mentioned in the clarification email, aborts on a communication problem. So when I was writing that code, I had a choice. Do I return an error or do I just abort? And I figured people wouldn't check return values, so the better thing to do was to abort, because I assume that would end up being less confusing overall. I think that's still right, but it does cause one type of confusion for another. And related to this first point, that we only need to filter things after the program starts, you might say, well, how do we figure that out? And we mentioned using strace in the assignment. And I think it's probably easiest to like work with the original program and look at what operations are being done, or make a test program that runs the calls you want and see that way what operations are being done. Rather than setting up your privilege separation and you have like all the calls to do the inter-process communication and other stuff going on, just keep it simpler. If you use the -f option, as I probably should have given a tutorial on reading this, the lines are prefixed with process IDs. You can figure out what PID something is in. If you like write something, you can look for what PID does that write call happen in. And also, if you trip your filter, probably strace will show something about that. Also, another note, you probably want to use -l setconf when making the executable, or else that will be because the setconf library code won't be included by default if you don't. So questions on the sandbox assignment? Anything I didn't allude to? Yeah?
Kind of a broad question. For the filter, it looked like it wasn't setting the, like, you know how you gave like the little code snippet where it was like check and then the setconf add rule?
Yeah. I thought that was the code I was using. So the first thing I'm going to check is make sure that I did not read the setconf man page incorrectly. Because rule add returns return value that should return 0 on success. So
yeah.
If it doesn't return 0, something is off.
But when I remove the check, and I just have the adding the filter rules, then it works appropriately and will filter out if you try doing like the $danger$. But if I have the check, then it just never outputs anything.
So the check should out. So if the check is there, it shouldn't be. Assuming we're using a version of check that doesn't optimize away, you should be writing that call. I'll need to probably take a closer look some other time. You send me an email with what's going on. But the idea is that check is just if it's not equal, if it doesn't pass, it's printing an error. That's all it's supposed to do, right? And that shouldn't change anything if the error doesn't get printed. But I probably need more context to figure out what's actually happening in your case. Other questions? Okay. So one other on assignment. So if you look at the schedule, the final assignment is this thing listed as challenge, which is basically sort of half the final. And it's going to be several assignments in the sort of attack format we've seen in the semester. And there will be 7 of them. You have to do any 5. And for all of them, you're going to create an attack X program where, and a change to the format, I supply an output file. I'm doing this because people are not reliably outputted to standard out, and I'd like my to have fewer special cases to create. So we supply an output file that you open and write to. Then we're going to get a new copy of the challenge executable. So if you modify the challenge executable, we will undo those modifications. So please don't try to use that strategy. It's not like the virus program. And then we will run the challenge executable with randomization, ASLR disabled, with your input. And your goal is that when we do that, the challenge program seems to terminate normally, and the output ends with a message saying you passed the challenge. There's more details about what that means in the assignment, mostly about, no, it is not okay if it says, you passed the challenge. You didn't pass the challenge. That is, you didn't pass the challenge, but it doesn't. It's also not okay if it says, sorry, you passed the challenge. You did not pass the challenge. No, not okay. But for the most part, that's pretty, gonna hopefully reasonably clear. And as I mentioned, any 5 of 7 for full credit, I'm finding it's 20% credit for each one you complete, no extra credit, and partial credit is we'll just take the best 5. I will have the challenges in rough order of my guess about difficulty. So my guess might be wrong, and my guess might assume that you figure out what the technique is, and if you like are trying to use a strategy that doesn't work, like it might be way more challenging, you know. So just keep that in mind, but I will try to have them in rough order by my guess as to how difficult they are. And I will supply example solutions to all the prior attack assignments on Canvas that you are welcome to use to construct your challenge solutions. And some challenges will come with some extra information, like a source code, or like the source code for the C program, or README, or similar, that you should refer to. That might give hints that are specific to that, or other information. So questions on the upcoming challenge assignment, and I intend to have things released by Friday. And it's due the last, it's due the Tuesday before finals. Questions? Okay. So on the schedule stuff, I realized the schedule page wasn't up to date. I took a look at that. My basic future plan is to talk about bounce checking. So today we'll talk about address sanitizer and Valgrind memcheck, which are kind of the more used bounce checking tools, and just talk about like, well, what do these actually protect against? And what's their performance like? Why don't we just turn on address sanitizer and not have buffer overflows? That sort of question. Then I plan to talk about something called control flow integrity, which is basically kind of a different point of view is, well, the problem with our code execution bugs is that we have returns or calls that go to places that no return or call should go to. So can we check before we do a return or do a call that it actually goes to a location that is valid for a return or a call? And this idea is called control flow integrity. So I'd like to talk a bit about that. And then my plan was, if we have extra time, to talk about some cross-site scripting mitigation. So who here has heard of content security policy? Okay, so I guess that is not a topic that's covered in 3710. So talk about that and the same origin policy. Who here has heard of the same origin policy? A few people, okay. So talk about those web topics. Given that they're less covered than I thought, maybe I'll try to think about moving that up. My problem with that is my slides for that are old and probably need revision. And I need to think about how I navigate, like, I don't want to just review cross-site scripting. And I don't think that's a good use of our time. But it seems like there's some things you haven't seen. I guess the other thing is, who's here has heard of HTTP-only cookies? Nope, okay. Interesting. Okay, guess we don't cover some things about sort of that web stuff. So there's probably some stuff. I need to think about how to make it so, as I said, I don't want to like spend a bunch of time reviewing cross-site scripting, since I think you would not appreciate that. Okay. Some questions on kind of future class plans. Okay, so we were looking at baggy bounce check, where basically the idea is that if we were doing this buff equals I, we'd first kind of basically say sort of check that, you know, the start of object, we basically compute the start of buff using the table able and check that, you know, the size is, you know, that the new pointer, that buff plus I, that buff plus I is still in range. Right, so we have that sort of our idea. So whenever we do pointer arithmetic, we like look up where is the, how big is this object actually, and based on that, are we still inside the object after we do our, you know, pointer indexing or pointer arithmetic. And you know, this doesn't end up being super fast if we think about kind of a typical function. So here I have string cat. This is definitely something we want bounce checking for. And if we're thinking about how many checks we're doing here, like kind of the naive thing is that each of these involves looking up in our table, how big is the thing that D points to, how big is the thing that S points to, is D plus I still in the, less than that, is S plus I still less than that, and so on. So we might say naively, is this a string cat, did I? Oh, this is not cat, is it? This is, I can't write functions. Okay, string copy. I don't know how I didn't catch that in the previous semester. So in this case, we have like, basically we have string len s times two checks, right? It's not great. And what we really want to happen to make this efficient is we want to somehow like have the optimizer figure out that we really, you know, can just do one bounce check, right? The most efficient version of this code you know, we just would have a, you know, one check. We kind of just record the size. And we kind of compute probably, I guess I should say, like the, we compute a size, which is like min of the size of S and the size of D, which we compute by reading the table, and then we compare to that, right? That's what the code we want generated, and maybe the compiler optimizer can figure this out, or we can like have heuristics, but the challenge of like getting code that does that sort of thing is why this sort of added bounds checking often ends up not being super efficient. So one other thing about this is that we have this separate table, and that was a big part of the cost of this idea. And it's a cost we're going to see again when we talk about how address sanitizer and Valgren memcheck work. There's an alternative to that idea, which is that we can have our pointers include the information in the table in the pointer. Now, of course, this pointer is not usable, but the idea is that when we want to actually dereference this pointer, we just bitwise operation out the size field into zeros. And this design keeps us from having a separate actual table. We just, when we have our malloc return, you know, it returns a pointer with the size, and we make sure every time we dereference a pointer, we undo the size, check the size, and undo it. So that's kind of the bounds check. So one thing I mentioned is that we're kind of checking pointer arithmetic, and there are kind of two issues with this idea, with what bound checking does, and that we're just checking pointer arithmetic, making sure we stay inside the object. One issue is here. What are the bounds that bounds checking is going to use, that this table lookup idea is going to give us for P? So we're going to look up. So can someone tell you, sir, we're going to look up. So we have this table lookup that gives us the start of what P points to. What is that going to return? Someone tell me, what do you think? So either what do you think it does return, or what do you think we want it to return? No volunteers. So let's talk about what we want to happen here. If I have this pointer P, and I do P of n, what n's do I want that to be valid for? No volunteers for, yeah, back there. You say between 0 and 1,020? Okay. Yeah?
I'm not sure if I'm looking at this right, but wouldn't it be like 1,024 times
1,024? Because we have the space of the buffer. Okay, so you're saying it should be, so we have different opinions here, okay. So we say 0 to 120, and you say 0 to 1,024 times 1,024. Okay, other opinions? I can think of some other answers I could justify. Yeah.
Well, are we just, oh, never mind.
I'm asking p, if I do p of n, what are valid n's as far as like what our bounds checking should do? Yeah. A pointer, this is 8 bytes probably. 28, okay. Any other opinions? So what? Yeah. Okay, so you're saying, it should be 0 to, or 1,028 times 1,024, okay. 1,028. So the size of this struct, this is 1,024 plus 8, is going to be 1,032 bytes. You want that size? Okay. Okay, any other opinions? So, let me ask a question. Is p of negative 1, is that invalid or valid? Who thinks p of negative 1 is a perfectly fine thing to do? Who thinks it's not a fine thing to do? Okay, no clue. Okay, so, an interesting idea for an opinion. As far as, like, accessing something consistent, it's accessing something in the same buffer. Usually we allow this, but I understand the arguments are saying, we don't allow negative indices, but that's in the same buffer, okay. So that was one other opinion I kind of expected, is that, well, we have a pointer to the middle of the array, we can use that to get earlier in the array, and that, is not overflowing anything, staying in the same object. So one thing I've noticed here is that one person was taking into account that we were in the middle of the buffer, and then we forgot that we were in the middle of the buffer, and also in the middle of the array of structs. So we probably actually want to adjust this to be 1,032 times 1,020 for the remaining struct foos plus the 1,020, 8. Yeah, it's a little more complicated. To take into account that the p doesn't point to the first element, there aren't 1,024 structs after where p points. There's only around 1,020 of them. And actually, that probably should be 1,019. So we want to be careful about that. So I would argue from a protecting against buffer overflows point of view, I really would like us to not go into here. That'd be really great. Now, the problem with our baggy bounds checking idea is that when we look up an address, we can only get one size. And I want to get the size that is this 1,024 byte buffer for p, but for a hypothetical q, struct. That's a pointer to a struct. I want to get the size of the array. And we can't store two different sizes. So that's something we're going to lose here. And we're also going to see that this is also a problem address sanitizer has. That we can't store two different sizes, so we end up generally kind of missing this case. The other issue is that we're checking on pointer arithmetic, and sometimes C programmers do bad things with pointer arithmetic. So here's some code from F to C, a real program that people use that translates Fortran to C. And Fortran has index arrays where one is the first element of the array. And if you want to translate that to C code, well, we just make a pointer that's deliberately to before the array, because we know all the indices are going to be at least one. Easiest way to translate it. Unfortunately, really bad for a bounds checking code. Questions? Okay, so look at baggy bounds checking. We can also talk about address sanitizer. So address sanitizer uses a kind of similar idea. It has a big lookup table, and it's set by memory allocations and stack allocations. It has some differences from the baggy bounds checking idea that make it kind of less reliable about detecting overflows, but easier to implement. The biggest thing is that the table says whether memory is valid or invalid. It doesn't tell us sizes. So it can only detect when there are errors from us accessing memory that's in between two objects. And it's only checking the table when we dereference pointers. A consequence of having this different design is that it is actually kind of more precise than the baggy bounds idea. The baggy bounds idea, we rounded up the object sizes so we could easily sort of look things up. But that's not good for finding bugs, right? Like in the fuzzing tool assignment, we wanted to find bugs. And for bugs, we really want it to be the case if we're off by one, we get an error. Baggy bounds really doesn't do that. But address sanitizer does, and how do they do it? Their table is very big and has info for every single byte and doesn't do any rounding. Because that's better for error finding. It's not better for enforcing avoiding overflows. And basically, how address sanitizer works is every time we access memory with a pointer, it checks the lookup table to make sure that memory location is valid. We just have this giant lookup table. And to make this reliable, we need to have our buffer overflow actually go to invalid memory. And so there's a question of how do we make that happen? So one challenge is, what about the stack? Right. Usually things on the stack are right next to each other, so we have to change how we allocate things on the stack to add deliberate unused space. And that's one of the things that address sanitizer does as part of the compilation process, is that we'll deliberately allocate sort of unused space after an array on the stack, just so that there will be something in the table that's invalid there that we won't try to write. This also means that if we're thinking of what happens with our array, that if we have some sort of array out of bounds issue where we can choose an index, address sanitizer is not going to stop it from being a security problem. So in this example, if I can just write to array of 0x13 by using an integer overflow, for example, without writing to anything in the red zone there, address sanitizer is going to say, everything's great. And this means that address sanitizer isn't like a good security solution. That yes, it's going to stop some exploits, but it's not going to reliably detect buffer overflows at runtime. It's going to detect certain types reliably, but there's other types where the attacker can just avoid tripping address sanitizer. Which was not true with the baggy bounds idea, where with baggy bounds, we'd say, oh, the object is only this big. that goes out of bounds, it's an error. Doesn't matter that we happen to hit something else. I have this one. Now, so another issue with this technique is that we wanted to add these kind of red zones to our allocations in order to have something invalid to detect. And again, we have the issue with structs that we can't do that. And this is partly because a goal of Address Sanitizer is that you compile your code with Address Sanitizer and use a library that you didn't recompile. For that to work, we can't change how the struct looks. And that means we can't, just like bagging bounds checking, we can't detect these internal overflows reliably. So we have Address Sanitizer, so it's nice. It's better than bagging bounds, mostly in that you can actually use it. And that it reliably detects bugs. But it kind of still requires extra space, both for the table and for kind of our space between objects to make the detection reliable. And it doesn't sort of prevent all out of bounds accesses, like baggy bounds kind of prevents them from being dangerous, and Address Sanitizer, a program that we compile with Address Sanitizer is still subject to attack if we have kind of wild pointer accesses. So there's also another program you may have heard of, Valgrind Memcheck. Who's heard of Valgrind Memcheck? Okay, a bunch of people. So it's similar to Address Sanitizer, but works on unmodified binaries. It basically uses the same idea as Address Sanitizer, that we have a table of where the valid memory locations are, and we change every read and write to use that table. But rather than changing it at compile time, we change it at runtime, because it's an emulator. So just, it's an emulator, it changes how reads and writes work in the machine code when it emulates it. And we change malloc and free by substituting them with a new version that adds the sort of valid and invalid marking in the table. So let's go through talking about our bounds checking ideas. Which of these schemes either detects or makes ineffective these scenarios? We'll start with our first one. Let's say we're calling assembly code, and the assembly code has a buffer overflow. Which of these schemes can deal with that? So let's start with just show of hands. So start with Ed, who thinks our fat pointers idea will deal with our assembly code having a buffer overflow. Who thinks it will not? New people? No clue. Okay. So if we think about these, our fat pointers approach, that required that we change how pointers are represented. And we can't do that with it. So as a C compiler, we can do that. As an assembler, we can't do that, right? The instructions have to work the same, they have to use the same registers. So the fat pointers approach is not going to work. And we actually have the same issue with all the first three approaches. The only thing which can help us is approach D, because it's an emulator, it changes how the read and write instructions work. For the other things, we're relying on the C compiler changing how pointer uses works. And the C compiler doesn't compile assembly, and when we're reading assembly, it's not obvious what the pointer is, even. Okay, how about number two? Who thinks A would help with number two? that we have some code that allows, you know, adds 150 bytes to a 100 byte buffer on the heap. Who hands for A? Who thinks A would not help? Okay. How about B? Who thinks B would help with number two? B would not help. How about C? C would not help. Okay, so we have. How about D? D would not help. Okay. So we have no opinion on some. I would say all of these do something about this problem. That if it's our code that we compile with the C compiler that goes out of bounds in the heap, all of them will detect this. There will be some, in the case of address sanitizer or memcheck, there will be some padding around the object. So we're going to detect going to that when we go 150 bytes. In the case of the FatFinders approach, we'll go out of bounds of the minimum and maximum in the pointer struct. And in the case of Abby bounds, it's going to be rounded to 128 bytes. When we go to 150, oops, it's going to say, oh, that's bad. You went to a different object. How about three? Who thinks our fat pointers approach will help here? Thinks it will not help. Okay, a few people. So we have a split there. So I think the fat pointers approach, if it's implemented by the, if assuming this is C code, I think it will help here. That's because when we make a pointer to our array on the buffer on the stack, the compiler is going to give us our sort of, remember our, you know, my pointer. It's going to be sort of have a minimum of the beginning of the buffer and a maximum of the end of the buffer. And we're going to use this information whenever we manipulate the pointer. So like the compiler will actually like do the bookkeeping in this case because it has the information of the real size of the buffer. How about B, who thinks our baggy bounds checking would help with this? Thinks it would not help. Okay, so most people say it would not help. So I think it would help, except that 120 is less than the rounding. It's going to round to 128. Oops, we're just not going to notice. Well, I guess it would not help, except it will prevent it from being harmful. But it won't actually detect it. So the rounding will make it not harmful, but it won't detect it. And I would say address sanitizer will detect this, but Valgrind memcheck won't reliably detect this. And that's because what's next to this array is probably stuff we don't want modified, and there's not going to be anything that we can mark as invalid in our sort of table of what's in memory. So I have, all right, sort of not D for that. Questions on that idea? People look confused. Yeah.
Can you explain again? I understand how it's not going to detect me, but how is it making it not harmful?
How is it making, so question for three, why baggy bounds checking won't detect it, right? Because it's, because we rounded out the size. But it's not harmful because there's no other objects in that memory. So B won't detect, but no other objects in 128, in 20 bytes. Question? Question, for three, it won't work because there's no place for Valgrind to put something it can't modify, given that it can't modify the executable. Yeah, so the stack layout is whatever's in the machine code that's there. Valgrind can't add an extra sort of invalid area if there isn't already one there. Yeah.
For example, in number three, if it was 128 byte buffer stack and you were inserting inserting, for example, 130 bytes of baggy bounds checking still work, or would it cap off at 128?
So question, what if we went to 130 bytes with baggy bounds checking? The answer is it would detect that in addition to making it not be harmful.
Like, I mean, if the buffer was also 128 bytes large.
It would detect it reliably then in that case. So basically, baggy bounds checking, we kind of round the size to the power of 2, and then we carefully check that the access stays within that power of 2 range. Does that make sense?
Okay, so it's better if it's closer to the power of 2.
So it's more reliable detecting the errors if it's closer to power of 2. In either case, it prevents it from being harmful because there's no other objects in that range, which we did by wasting space. That answer your question? Okay, so let's go through our last one. So let's say we have code that uses an attacker-controlled array index. So who thinks the fat pointers approach will prevent this from being bad? This is item 4. So we have some code where we just accept an array index and just use it. So who thinks the fat pointers approach will prevent this from being bad? Thinks it will not? Okay. One person? Okay.
Potentially both. Like, how far, if it's like a little bit out, then maybe not. But if it's like way, like, out of.
Okay, so you're saying it depends on how far out? I think, assuming this is the only thing, I think the fat pointers approach should reliably detect this regardless.
Yeah.
Because when we make the pointer, the compiler can put the exact minimum and maximum.
Wait, this is for A.
This is for A, yes. So for B, who thinks. It will we reliably would at least detect or prevent from being harmful item 4, the sort of wild array index. Thinks we would not reliably detect or prevent from being harmful. So I think the answer is yes, we would, that both A and B, we would detect and prevent this from being harmful because we're going to make sure it stays in the same object. We don't care where the index ends up going. We're just going to say, is this less than the size we actually allocated? And if it is less, we're going to not edit a different object, at least. We might change some memory we're not supposed to, but it will be memory that's not used. How about C? I think C would prevent this from being harmful or detected. I think C would not. So I think C does not help here. If we know where something is, address sanitizer, it's just going to say, is that memory valid? So we can just skip over all the padding as an attacker and directly write something that we shouldn't write. And there's the same problem with D, or not check that. They're both just checking, is the address you're dereferencing valid? They're not checking, did you get to that address in a sane way? Whereas A and B both do that, but they have a much higher overhead and therefore much harder to find implementations of because people already think address sanitizer is slow. And these better techniques that actually kind of prevent item 4 from being exploitable are way slower. Okay, so questions here? Okay, so we'll probably talk a little about this. I expect we get some more, but that's fine because I think we actually understand these schemes, hopefully. And I should have the challenge assignment released before class on Friday. And we'll go through probably a little on control flow integrity and then maybe some obscurity.